Non. Cosa?
Sai.
Tutto ti ho detto che una patience, and I like to revisit the question that Peter asked last week about self-knowing consciousness.
Peter,
The question was, could you please throw a light on how if you accept such a thing as self-knowing consciousness, that it will lead to infinite regression? Answering that, first of all, we need to change terminology. It shouldn't be expressed as infinite regression of our self-knowing consciousness, as it should be called infinite regression of our experience, Longji. So, first of all, we need to be clear about the position of the third school and the fourth school. The third school is called mind-only school of Buddhist philosophy, okay? Mind-only school. And the highest school is called consequentialist or prasangika school. Now, the third school in the middle, it's a school that believes in self-knowing consciousness, whereas the higher school, whereas the philosophers and the proponents of the higher school rule out or negate self-knowing consciousness. Now, the proponents of the middle school, tell the proponents of the higher school, you have to have self-knowing consciousness, or else cognition will fall apart. So, if you have a consciousness, and if a consciousness, if the same consciousness, were aware of its own consciousness of something, then the second consciousness would become self-aware consciousness. And now, if you have two moments of consciousness, the first moment of consciousness and the second moment of consciousness, in the same case in you, that's rather. So you have two moments of consciousness, and you ask the question, okay, because it's a consciousness, given that according to your position, a consciousness must have a self-knowing faculty. So the question is, if you have this first moment of consciousness, what realizes or what knows that first moment of consciousness? And of course, if the first moment of consciousness knows itself, if the first moment of consciousness knows the first moment of consciousness, then that very first moment would become self-knowing consciousness. And then you, is of course, that's silly to say that the first moment of consciousness, consciousness knows itself. And if one were to say, the first moment of consciousness is realized, is understood, but the second moment of consciousness, by the same line of reasoning, then what determines the existence of the second moment of consciousness that has happened and understood the first moment? So, what really knows of the second moment? If you say that the second moment of a consciousness needs another second moment, then what would the second moment of consciousness know its existence? In this way, you know, it will lead to infinite regression of your jit experience. So Peter asked me a question, and that was a test, and I have set the test. Another question. Anybody else would like to test me? So, if there are no questions, then I'd like to now talk about the second truth. That is the truth of origin of our suffering. Last week, or the week before that, I talked about the first truth of our suffering, and its four features or attributes. So tonight, I'd like to touch upon the second truth. Okay, now in Buddhism, there are four things called the four truths, and these teachings on the four truths were the first teaching given by the Buddha, and the Lama says the teachings or the discourse and lecture on the four truths form the foundation of a Buddhist thought and practice. So, what are the four truths about mundane existence, ordinary existence, and transmundane existence? So, the first two truths pertain to mundane human existence, for example. And these two truths are called truth of suffering and truth of origin of suffering. So, the truth of suffering, in a way, is dealt with in terms of truth, cause and effect. The effect is physiopsychological distress and stress and problems that we experience. And so that is the truth, is a fact. And then what brings these these into existence, what gives rise to these, is said to be the origin of suffering, the cause. So then it's all right to talk about present situation of suffering and the causes of suffering. It would be pointless to talk about them if there were no solutions offered to this problem. And the solutions to putting a permanent end to suffering and causes of suffering are said to be the next true truths. Truth of permanent cessation of all suffering and the truth of path or means to that. So the last two truths are truth of cessation, the result, and the truth of means or the path, you know, the cause leading to that. So as for truth of suffering itself, which is the result, there are said to be three degrees or three levels of suffering. And the first suffering is suffering of actual misery or pain, physical and psychological pain. That anyone who has a mind, a sentient being, can easily relate to and realize that it is painful and therefore suffering. Even animals, let alone humans, everyone who is not free, but everyone within the bounds of mundane existence knows easily. The second level of suffering is called suffering of change of a seeming pleasant state, pleasure, into pain. And is it that level of suffering is not easily recognized by all. It is recognized by people who have been schooled in some philosophy or in some tenets. And the third level of suffering is what is called suffering of pervasive conditioning. It's insidious, it's pervasive and insidious. It's a suffering that we have, but we don't know that we have. It's only the enlightened being or transcendental beings, when they look upon our earthly life, they know that we carry this suffering, which is highly pervasive and insidious. So as humans, our life, besides being comfortable materially, is fraught with the suffering of sickness, suffering of constant aging, suffering of separation from their beloved ones, suffering of meeting with unpleasant situations and people, and etc. And there are so many other kinds of suffering. And suffering of the psychological pain. and we can all relate to these, and these are facts about life. Now, Buddha says, to overcome these sufferings, we need to be able to overcome the suffering of change, of pleasant state to the pain. And in order to overcome the second level of suffering and be free from the past two, we need to be free from the seed, the underlying seed of all suffering, which is the suffering of pervasive conditioning. So what is then that third suffering? Pervasive, it pervades all sentient life as sentient beings. And it is insidious, and we don't know we have it. And so, what is that? To know what exactly that is, we need to be exposed in the teaching for some time. Anyway, to remove, to be free from this suffering, we need to identify a cause of this underlying suffering. And if we identify the cause, then what we need to do is eradicate or avoid the cause. What is the underlying cause of the suffering of a pervasive conditioning? The underlying cause lies in the second main truth, the truth of origin of suffering. And it is this one tonight that I want to spend some time on. So, from Buddhist perspective, all our experiences, pleasant or unpleasant, are not created by an independent being outside us, an independent, omnipotent person who has control over life on earth. All our experiences arise from our own actions that we do physically, verbally, and mentally, and the underlying thoughts, which are said to be unwholesome. Underlying
thoughts.
So, our actions, especially afflictive actions and unwholesome underlying thoughts, are called the truth of origin of suffering. Between actions and the underlying unwholesome cause, it is mainly the attitude, psychological negative psychological traits or unwholesome cause that are the truth of origin of suffering. So how do we know that between actions and underlying negative thoughts or negative psychological traits, between the two, it is the latter which is the main cause of our suffering, and not so much the actions themselves. So we know this from an example. You know, if you have a seed, a potent, healthy seed, whatever seed or whatever thing, if the seed doesn't come in contact with soil and as well as with the moist and heat, the seed will never germinate, will never germinate into a seedling, into a sprout. The seed will be, you know, will be frozen in its potency. In the same way, our actions, however many that there are that we have performed, and however many predispositions of the actions that we have, our minds may have received, as long as they remain away from negative emotions, they will not be able to germinate into suffering. As soon as, I should say that again. When we are unable to free the mind of unwholesome thoughts, then, you know, propelled or prompted by negative impulses or all negative thoughts, we perform actions, and those actions will have the influence of negative thoughts. Negative thoughts will act like moist heat and so on, and then the karmic seed will germinate into pleasant or unpleasant experiences. So, what kind of thought that we have is called unwholesome thoughts. An unwholesome thought is a thought which then arises in our mind. You know, the initial tranquil state of the mind, the neutral tranquil state of mind, is ruffled. And the mind, unlike before it was disturbed, is now agitated, disturbed, and highly reactive to things. And it is a negative, unwholesome negative thought, is a negative mental factor, not the main mind, a negative mental factor, which are like the underlying currents which prompt various thoughts. How do we know that negative impulses, psychological impulses, or negative mental factors ruffle and agitate and disturb our mind? But it can be known by comparing how we were feeling before, you know, before desire or attachment cropped up in our mind, before jealousy cropped up in our mind, before anger cropped up in our mind. What were we feeling? What was the state of our mind like? And how how we felt as soon as desire, hatred, jealousy, miserliness, or so on, when they crop up, how do we feel inside? Is there peace, serenity, or what? And then you can compare the true state of mind when after such when after the negative thought has subsided. After a negative thought has subsided, then you were the person who felt both true states. Which was more peaceful? That easily tells us how negative thoughts are unpeaceful and destructive. So once a negative thought has subsided, and when you got some breathing space, as it were, and when you look back at how you felt before a negative thought, let's say desire was manifested, how you felt before it and how you felt during it. And once the desire or whatever it is has subsided, when the dust has settled, as it were, then a clarity will dawn and you will be able to objectively look at the true experiences. And you will know that before the arising of negative thought, your mind was relatively serene, relaxed, at ease. And when a negative thought cropped up, the mind lost its control over itself. It was agitated and it needed to do something under the sway of that negative thought.
这个呢，它肯定会你，你去考虑嘛，还是先有些消化掉了，对你，那么长时间的，你也不到了，那先不用再有些消化，先消化，就是不要太多。It
is said that if we can know that the mind loses its peace of mind or serenity when an unwholesome thought becomes active, then we can easily deduce that even when a subtle, not manifest or gross, even when a subtle negative thought, a subtle psychological impulse crops up, although it may not be as disturbing as the previous one, it still has some disturbing influence on the mind. So, negative impulses or unwholesome thoughts we call delusions. And when we have a desire, the mind becomes delusional, and so are therefore delusions. So when we have them, you know, there's never peace in the mind. However long they last, there's no peace. And so, life in a mundane existence is never far from a negative impulses. They are just waiting that they're in dormant state, for negative thoughts have not been permanently severed at the root.
Mm-hmm.
So now we need to talk about the origin of truth of suffering, negative thoughts or emotions or whatever under four sections. The first is identifying what delusions or negative thoughts are. And how do they arise? The third is the underlying causes of the negative thoughts. And the fourth is the drawbacks of unwholesome thoughts, the negative implications for one of negative thoughts. So to deal with the first one, to identify what the negative thoughts are, so there are several ways of identifying. You identify negative thoughts as a 3 in number, 6 in number, 10 in number, and so on. When we identify negative thoughts and as 3 in number, then they are called the 3 poisons of mind. The 3 poisons of mind, namely, desire, hatred, and ignorance. And when we identify negative thoughts as 6 in number, then we are talking about 6 root negative thoughts or delusions. And when we talk about negative thoughts as being 10 in number, we do so in this way. 5 of these 10, 5 of them are governance view, philosophical view. 5 of them are non-views, views and non-views. So, what are the 3 poisons of mind as enumerated before? They are desire or attachment, hatred or anger, and then the last one is ignorance. So, when we talk about the second division of negative thoughts, they are very subsuming in nature because the first and the third fall within the second. So, what the second way of identifying delusions or negative thoughts are seeing them as 6 in number, and these are what we call 6 root or principal negative thoughts. The first of which is desire. So what is a desire? Desire is unwholesome thought which perceives or which looks at a contaminated or afflicted phenomena.
So,
이제 유대인 방교하는지 쉬우지 다음에 지금 가가시다 오지
So desire, whenever a mind is attached to something, to a person or to a thing, if the mind is really hard, it's hard to take the mind off that object. The mind of desire, almost like the coffee, percolates into the object of desire, much like if you pour oil into a cloth, then the oil just seeps through whether paper or cloth. And therefore, once it seeps through, it's really hard to to separate the two. But desire is very penetrating. It penetrates into the object that desire seeks. Whereas other negative thoughts, they are not like desire. The way they, when they observe and see their objects, it's like affects. Negative thoughts are only affects, like a stamp on the letter. So desire is very pervasive, and now there are three kinds of desire. The first is called desire for the desire realm. You know, desire for the desire realm. So we live in the realm of desire. So desire for desire realm means you develop attraction to things that are in the desire realm, not in the form realm or the formless realm, but in the desire realm. And sisi means desire for existence, literally translated. What it means is a desire for things within entire mundane existence. Desire for phenomena or things within entire mundane or ordinary existence. And the third is called jiksi, means desire for the transitory. Desire for the transient or the transitory. That means the transitory or the transient refers to our body and mind, which are called physiopsychological aggregates. So desire for the transient means, you never want to be separated from your body and mind. So there's attachment to our afflictive aggregates.
소화 증세는 너무 두시면 되잖아요. 몇 시간 다 계속되면 대신에 또 오면 되잖아요.
Desire is the main of the chief of all negative thoughts, which really makes the mind delusional into thinking an object of desire, an object of attachment is worthy of pursuit and worthy of the chase and possession. And therefore, desire really cages, puts us in the cage of our mundane existence. It's the worst of all the negative thoughts. So, if desire is the underlying problem distorted perspective to be developed about things we be attached to, then how do we address this problem? There are two ways. Number one is meditation on loathsomeness of the object of desire. And that is into seeing that the object of desire is not as that attractive, desirable, as one's attachment would have one perceive that way. And then for that, you meditate on how the object of desire, whether material possession or desire from human body, then if you remove, peel the skin, what is so desirable about a person? And then you just meditate on such things. Our body is made up of many parts, and all the parts are wrapped up in skin. And then, as soon as the skin is gone, what is there so desirable about it? And such a thing is not so much to undermine the worth of human existence, the value of the function of human body, but to curb or curtail excessive attachment to objects. The second, so this kind of meditation is a temporary antidote. A permanent antidote to desire is to understand what is called emptiness of inherent nature of a person. Emptiness of inherent nature of the person who feels desire for things and so on. So that is a desire, a first of the six root delusions. The second root delusion is hatred. Hatred or hate is a mental factor, not the one of the six primary consciousnesses. It's a mental factor. It's an aspect of the mind, if you like. Which is highly malicious, highly destructive, and violent, wanting to inflict pain on the object, on its object.
或者说你做了实践的实践里面，你要对你去去考虑，有个因为有个工啊，你考虑你要多个忙嘛，是不
？And anger or hatred, anger and hatred, so I'm lumping them into one now here, in translation. Anger and hatred can be developed with regard to enemy and inanimates, to the enemy or the inanimate. And So, yeah, animate and inanimate. And it is developed between attractive and non-attractive objects. It is developed towards non-attractive, you know, perceived non-attractive objects, and not some grotesque objects. And now, anger. When anger develops, it blinds our perspective. Whenever we have anger against, we see them grotesque. And therefore, anger, unlike any other negative thoughts, is the most destructive of all, because a flash of anger can destroy or consume a painstakingly gathered merits, and anger is one thing that can cause a rebirth in one of the three lower realms of existence.
今天你问了，我们是在外行吧？你到一个你不知道怎么样，对吧
？So anger, you know, therefore is highly disruptive and robs your peace of mind. And so how do we address the problem? Temporarily, we practice patience, tolerance and patience. And we cultivate a sense of love for other people and objects of anger. Permanently, but in the long term, anger can be addressed yet again by developing emptiness of inherent nature of object of anger and oneself, a person who has anger.
你把三八年，三八年嘛，我接受你，送你点。
The third root negative thought, unwholesome thought, is vaigya. It can be pride, but no, let's say arrogance. Haughtiness and arrogance.
这是没对。当年说自己去空有的东西，反正去基本没有用。目前呢，先肯定弄过去，以前没吃过的，对吧？
So, arrogance or haughtiness is a mental factor which looks at, which observes or which looks at mundane, contaminated phenomena like one's body, one's material possession. And then one develops a superiority complex. I'm better than these, and mine is better than theirs. And therefore, the mind becomes inflated with pride, ungrounded pride. So, what is the negative implication? What is the immediate negative implication of pride? It really If the reason why we experience stagnancy in our growth, whether in knowledge and so on. Because when the mind thinks that it is better than others, then it rests on the world, and no fresh effort is made for higher growth, and therefore of all negative emotions and negative thoughts, haughtiness or ungrounded pride is very delaying in effect, and therefore one reaches a plateau and rests on it.
And it's really very interesting about the true or common right within the religion. So she is comfortable with the idea of how long you do. So she's a man, she's a woman, 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 she's a woman.
So how can we address this problem of haughtiness? We can do that although when a person develops haughtiness on the grounds of their seeming superior physique, knowledge, education, whatever. But, you know, ask them to look at their own human physiology. How much they do, they are made up of many parts of the human body. How much do they actually know about what they make them up, and their ignorance would be exposed, and therefore that would have addressed haughtiness, and so on. And so whenever haughtiness crops up in the mind, maybe one is knowledgeable in one area, that one being knowledgeable about one area is not synonymous with the omniscience. Being omniscient about everything, you may have a specialized knowledge in one area, and how much more do you not know about? There will be, you know, a vast raft of areas one has no idea about, and that is very humbling, and that will therefore bring haughtiness to its ground, to its proper place. Now, the thought root delusion or negative thought, unwholesome thought is maripa. Mud is a negative, witness aware, non-aware, but it has been translated as ignorance, of which there are two kinds. So as for maripa, the great intimate Buddhist scholars like Chandrakirti, and Dhammakirti, for them, maripa and the view of transitory recollection, the view about the transient recollection of body and mind, we call citta. So for these great scholars, Chandrakirti and Dharmakirti, ignorance and the view about transient collection of the body and mind are the same. There's no difference. They are one or the same. Whereas another two Buddhist scholars, the two scholars are Kapatthapu, the great Indian master Asanga, and his brother or half brother Prasubandhu. They make a distinction between ignorance and what is called jitta, a view about transcendent collection. So according to this Indian master, ancient Indian Buddhist master Asanga, there is a clear distinction between ignorance and citta. Citta means a transcend. That means view. The way you view a transcendent collection of body and mind of yourself and many other people. So he says there's a great distinction. And he gives an example, a scenario. He says, it is twilight. And you are walking your way somewhere, and then all of a sudden you become startled because you thought you saw a snake. What you actually saw wasn't a snake, it was a striped, coiled rope in the manner of a snake in a coiled position. Okay, now you mistook a coiled rope for snake for two reasons. Because of a twilight condition. Because of a twilight condition. You mistook snake for a rope for the snake, and mistaking a rope for the snake, you develop a distorted awareness. In the same way, he says, ignorance and the view of transitory reflection are in the same manner. ignorance and transitory reflection are the it's a slight modification in my translation. So when you came across a piled rock and you mistook that for a snake, for two reasons. Okay, why? Because of a twilight condition. And then, based on that, you develop a distortion, a distorted perspective, and that is, there's a snake. In the same way, ignorance is like twilight. It clouds our mind. And therefore, based on ignorance, then we develop a distorted perspective or awareness about who we actually are in relation to our body and mind. So in relation, based on that ignorance, the twilight-like ignorance, we develop distorted perspective about ourselves, and that is called the view of a transient projection or transitory projection. So that's what Asanga and Vasubandhu said. But according to Chandra Kriti, according to Chandra Kriti and others, there is no distinction between ignorance and the view of a transitional connection, or the transient collection of our physiopsychological components, which are the basis of our person. So he says they are one and the same thing. So an ignorance is said to be ignorance, for it veils our mind from seeing the true underlying nature of our person and other things. So that is ignorance. Ignorance means to consider that we as a person, one as a person, exists independently in and of ourselves, independent of a body and mind. So that perspective veils, or that idea veils from seeing the absence of such a mode of existence. So how is that not different from citta, the view of transitory collection? The view of transitory collection, or the view of transient collection, looks at our person and what we own, our possessions, namely body and mind. And our mind views them as having innate, intrinsic nature about themselves. And so, which is not different from the perspective ignorance had. And therefore, there's no difference between citta and ignorance. It's called citta, the view of a transient collection, or a transient collection, because jik means transient. Collection means collection of what? Body and mind. So we as a person is one part matter and four parts of psychological entity. So, psychological components. So, how do we address the problem about ignorance? Ignorance makes us believe that things have intrinsic, that things that are set in themselves, except in the sense of self-existent nature, without depending on anything for the existence. And so what do we need to do? We need to cultivate a perspective which is diametrically opposed to the way ignorance views. In other words, as you say, a fresh paradigm in this. And now the next one is Ketum. Ketum is doubt. Here, deluded doubt. So deluded doubt. Deluded doubt here can be seen. Doubt about either Dhamma and Sangha as a valid guide on the path to freedom. And the second is doubt about the existence and the operation of all truths. And the doubt about law of causation, cause and effect. So the doubt is burning two candles, burning candle at the two ends. Burning candle at both ends. And so anyway, it's a wavering between two points. Is it this or is it that? And therefore not being able to come to a decisive conclusion. So, for example, when we hear teachings, Buddhist discourse on the four truths, which we are talking about, for example, and then why most Buddhists believe is indeed the teaching of the Buddha. But if a person develops deluded doubt, not skepticism, deluded doubt, then they are sitting on the fence. How can we address doubt, remove doubt? We need to gather right information. In other words, in Buddhist way of saying it is called, we need to hear a vast body of teaching. Okay, the sixth root delusion is called view. So, when we talk about view, now we are talking about deluded view, not correct view, not the liberating view. Deluded view, there are four, there are five. The first is jitta. Jit means transient. That is a view. Viewing a transient connection of body and mind as impermanent existence. The next is extreme view, tanka. And the third is called locked elements of distorted view. And the fourth is called double choksin. Double choksin means the view that my view is best or better. And the last one is the view that our way of life, my way of practice, is better than anybody else's. So, as you can recall, we have been talking about the truth of origin of suffering, and I said of that between karma and delusion, it is delusions that are more important, that are more significant in what they do, and therefore I started talking about delusions. And I said, when we talk about delusions, we can talk about under 14. So what we have just done is we have talked about identifying delusions. Now, next is, how do they arise? What are the causes of delusion? What are the drawbacks of delusions? And so on. So now the negative thoughts, the negative psychological traits or impulses, and Buddhism they are called yomoga, disturbing emotions, some translators have said. So disturbing emotions, all these, are considered in Buddhism one to real enemies. Why do one call anybody your enemy? Because they harm, afflict one with pain. And the Buddhism of Dharma says, negative or disturbing emotions are worse, far worse than your conventional human animals. Sorry, not animals, sorry. You must say I'm such an animal. Okay, my human enemies. With the human enemies. With the human enemies, in the relationship changes and change. Somebody who was your real, somebody who has been your future enemy, with the change of circumstances in their life, in your life, then, you know, your relationship changes. And then later on, you end up becoming friends. Because if you show a positive gesture to your enemy once, twice, three times, after a while, being a human, their heart warms up to you, the hostility gradually melts away, and your two hearts warm up to each other, and the friendship develops. But with regard to negative thoughts or disturbing emotions, that the better you do, the kinder, okay, if you feed them, and if you feed them, that is, if you give in to them, you are feeding them. If you give in to them, they become stronger and stronger and stronger. And they become worse. As they become stronger, they become worse in terms of their affliction. The stronger they get, the more affliction we get from them. And therefore, they never change at all. No matter what you do in relation to negative, disturbing emotions, any kind of gesture towards them is feeding them only to receive more pain at their hands. So, your human enemy, the worst a human enemy can do is put an end to your life. And putting it, yeah, that would be the worst thing. But they will never ever be able to harm and ruin your future lives, your future prospects. And Whereas the enemy of the disturbing emotions, they have done nothing but afflict or inflict pain, you know, time and again, but year in and year out, day in and day out, whenever they arise, they do nothing but disturb our psychological well-being. We are robbed of our peace. And so if you give in to them, then you know, you act on them. When you act on them, you are committing the virtues of unwholesome karma, then negative karma. A negative karma that you perform will have their consequences that you have to face yourself. So the negative karma was prompted by disturbing emotions. So they are nothing but harmful at all times. However, there's a medicating difference between enemy delusions as enemy and disturbing emotions as our enemies and human enemies. Now, while mitigating a sight of factor of our negative thoughts is that if ever you succeed in eradicating a negative thought, then they are permanently eradicated, never to return to the future. And therefore, once eradicated permanently, they are unreturnable, and therefore they will leave you in peace. That is not the case with human enemies. Human enemies, if you defeat them, you may rout them here to this place, but they will gather forces elsewhere and await another attack. And wild human enemies can be won through placating gestures. They have this downside. So, in this way, it's considered very vital to identify Newman's negative thoughts or disturbing thoughts, and then you know, see the downside of negative thoughts, and therefore not cultivate them, but keep them at bay. So, next Monday, I will talk about underlying causes. What causes disturbing emotions, and how, when they arise, how do they arise, and so on. And so, you know, we have a lot to cover in this area. So, any questions from tonight's
desire, for example, is communicated,
Yeah.
Where I can desire a tree. I can desire a tree.
Yeah.
I don't think the afflicted phenomenon needs to be there.
It's
the desire that has the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That brings about the consequences. Mm-hmm. And that's how I understand it.
Okay. Krishna, in here, when dealing with Yajasana, Yajasana is a static children mini, energy, Sahwana, children mini, energy, there are Jonasama, children energy, Yajasana waters. In here, some unfamiliar, in here, continue, I was I can desire a tree. 징동식으로는 띠약도 성 신경이 조절하고 성거로 와서 신경이 아니 사고도 제가 말을 와서
신경이 사실 성인이 좀 사각지어 시선이 무서워
그래
사고는 아니 주시고 신경도 줄 수 있었어요
네
사고는 여러 여러 사고 뭔가 있죠 저는 뭔가 야 사실 성인이 좀 멀모 그때 왔고 너는 이제 지금 사실
라
내가 유치해
라야
내 특집 보려고 내가 컨트롤러 사지에서 사지에서는 이제 사건을 찌어버리고 내려오는 사건이 되면 사건이 미화 생각하는 사건 찌어버리고 이거 사건이 미화네 너 상품이 뭔가 이제 아프니까 상품이 사건이 내려오는 거
So, if you recall when we talk about truth of suffering, you know, and when truth of suffering pertains to animate and inanimate objects within mundane existence. And truth of suffering, therefore, truth of suffering is afflicted phenomena. Afflicted phenomena. And not that a tree is afflicted with the pain, but the tree, for example, is an tree is part of our surrounding environment, physical environment, and our physical environment has arisen from our collective karma, our collective mundane karma, and therefore a tree is not afflicted with the pain. It is a part of the truth of suffering. And so when we talk about affection, you know, subject is contaminated phenomena. Something could be an object of contaminated phenomena, nature, result, or so on. So it's not as simple as that.
지금 무슨 사진이 올라왔습니까? 사진이
impure phenomena or affliction. Something associated with affliction. That is, when desire looks at an object, and then it thinks to itself that the object is highly worthwhile, it exaggerates the worthiness of the object desire. And therefore desire grows. And as the desire grows, what happens, you know, as a result of desire? There's more pain. Because desire is a negative, disturbing emotion. Whereas a non-afflicted phenomena, for example, if you concentrate on a non-afflicted phenomena, for example, you know, object of compassion, for example, universe and love, and so on. The more you meditate, the more you spend time thinking about stronger compassion, for example, for the right view, understanding, emptiness grows. So the outcome of such a growth of a positive thought is insight into things. So we'll stop there.
Yes.